WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
Welcome to Current Sports. I can hear the fireworks popping right now. Calm down, folks. It's only 1 o'clock. My goodness. Happy July 4th, one of my favorite holidays of the year. I mean, I can smell the hot dogs and hamburgers, and I'm getting hungry as we speak right now, just thinking about it. Hopefully, all are being safe. Grill safely, drink responsibly. Okay, let's not get too crazy. I know it's a great holiday, but hey, we have to be responsible at the same time. And we have a great show in store for you all today. I am excited because on today's Current Sports, one, not only we'll be talking with Sam Barque of Major League Eating. He's a Masters of Ceremonies for Major League Eating. He's going to dive into the world of competitive eating. He's really had a hands-on experience with it because he's been an MC for quite some time with MLE. We'll chat with him, but not only are we going to talk about, you know, competitive eating, we're going to bring our own competitive eating segment right here to Current Sports. And if you're sitting at home or, you know, outside grilling and listening to the show and are kind of puzzled as to how we're going to do that, well, folks, we're going to bring to you the first annual hot dog eating contest right here at WKAR's Current Sports. Matt and Alex will go at it, and whoever eats the most hot dogs out of them, I will see. Yes, I'm going to give my shot at this whole thing, too. I'm going to see if I can beat their record. Whoever can scarf down the most hot dogs in 5 minutes will be the 2014 hot dog eating contest champion for the year. That's fun stuff. Hopefully I don't get sick, okay? You don't want to miss that. But first, as I said, and also later on in the show, I can't forget this either, we're going to go back in time, give you a Current Sports throwback, and look back at two interviews, one with Michigan State, 247sports.com. Sports writer Dan Kilbridge, as he talks about recruiting and the status of the MSU football and men's basketball team for this upcoming season. And also, yes, we finally put a fork in it, folks. The World Cup dreams of the United States of America as they ended a 2-1 loss to Belgium. I sat down and talked with our Current Sports soccer expert, Brooks Lambeer of Impact Sports. We're going to go back in time and really dive into that discussion and really talk about whether or not Americans will really care about soccer now that the U.S. of A. is now out of the World Cup. A stacked show for you here on July 4th. Again, so honored you've allowed us to be a part of your holiday weekend. But before we get to all of that, Sam Barque, again, MC, Master of Ceremonies for Major League Eating. He has been a part of the world of competitive eating for quite some time. And I got the chance to talk with Sam about, you know, what it takes to be a competitive eater, you know, the tolls it takes on the human body, and so much more. And I started off the interview by talking with Sam about what exactly is the most impressive performance that he's ever seen in the world of competitive eating.
It's an easy question to answer, Al. It's got to be July 4th, 2013, almost a year ago to the day, Joey Chestnut on the main stage at the corner of Surf and Stillwell Avenues in Brooklyn, New York at last year's Nathan's Famous event. A world record 69 Nathan's Famous hot dogs and buns in 10 minutes. I was on the stage when it happened and I've still got goosebumps.
Wow.
The most electrifying sporting achievement in the history of mankind.
That's unbelievable. So 69 hot dogs is what he scarfed down.
69.
And that's a record, right?
That is the world record of hot dogs and buns. 69 Nathan's Famous hot dogs and buns in 10 minutes.
You know, we've heard the name Joey Chestnut, you know, reign throughout our TVs when it comes to the hot dog eating contest for quite some time now. He's become a household name and really the face for Major League Eating due to those accomplishments you just alluded to. What makes Joey Chestnut so special? And how was he able to scarf down 69 hot dogs? That's ridiculous.
The thing about Joey Chestnut from a sporting perspective, if you remember those great early Mike Tyson fights, before the first punch was thrown or before the referee even rang the bell, you took a look in Tyson's eyes before the fight, and more importantly, you took a look in his opponent's eyes, and you knew that the fight was over before it already started, right?
Right, exactly.
You know, you just knew. You saw those early Tyson fights, and you just knew that it was over. And Chestnut has the same aura and the same dedication to winning and the same dedication, frankly, to just obliterating his competition that Tyson had in his heyday. So Chestnut has this mental edge over his contestants. You know, he's going for his eighth consecutive yellow mustard belt this Friday, July 4th, at Nathan's Famous. This would be his eighth consecutive victory. No one in the history of sport has ever done this. It is unprecedented. He
wow.
obviously has great physical gifts that allow him to, you know, process and to, you know, to put down the world record 69 Nathan's Famous hot dogs and buns. But I think with Joey, he just does not let himself lose. He has a mental edge, and he's willing to do anything it takes in that 10 minutes to win.
And Sam, that's what I want to ask you about, because, you know, when you look at Joey, I mean, he's not, you know, a huge guy. He seems to be relatively slim, but to scarf down the amount of food in that short amount of time, it isn't normal. So I got to ask you, I mean, how is he able to do it physically wise? And, you know, when you talk about preparation for this, how do you prepare your body to go through something like that?
Well, Al, first and foremost, it's a great myth that only big males can succeed in competitive eating. If when your listeners, you know, tune into the broadcast on Friday,
yeah,
on 4th of July, and watch, they're going to see a range of body types, but more often than not, they're going to see athletic, in shape, trim men and women competing at the highest level. You know, the bottom line is you don't actually want to be that big to be able to eat that much.
Right, exactly. So how is Joey
able
to do
it? A lot of it is about athletic conditioning. You know, like if you were to try to sprint or run as hard as you could for 10 minutes, or if you were trying to, you know, lift weights for 10 minutes nonstop as hard and as fast as you could, or if you were trying to eat hot dogs and buns as hard and as fast as you could for 10 minutes, aerobic and basic athletic conditioning is as important as is stomach capacity, jaw strength, and things like that. So you're dealing with America's finest male and female athletes competing on July 4th.
So are these athletes at the gym running and doing all sorts of stuff to keep their body in shape to go through something like this as well? Regular training like that?
100%, absolutely. I don't want to speak to all the eaters, but you know, generally speaking, you're talking about a regular regimen of cardio, light weights, you know, trying to build lean muscle mass. You don't want to be too muscular, you don't want to be too tight going into the contest. So lean muscle mass and cardiovascular fitness from an athletic conditioning standpoint are the two key elements, the two key building blocks for success in competitive eating. That and razor-sharp teeth.
That's certainly very, very important, Sam. Ladies and gentlemen, if you're just now joining us here on Current Sports, we are talking with Sam Barkay, who is a representative from Major League Eating, better known as MLE. He is a Masters of Ceremonies. Now, you know, Sam, looking at, you know, an event like the Hot Dog Eating Contest, it's not, you know, the only event in competitive eating. You know, you have the Crystal Hamburgers and so on and so forth. What event do you consider to be the toughest?
I fortunately don't compete.
Right.
I haven't pushed myself physically to the limit like Joey Chestnut has and will this Friday.
Exactly. But for those athletes that you see compete,
you know, it really does vary from athlete to athlete. You've got, you know, you've got wing specialists.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like Michelle Lesko, who's who will be competing in the women's division this Friday, who's an amazing wing eater. 115 pounds, stands 5'4", a tiny, tiny girl. She has amazingly fast hands.
Oh, my God.
She's great at chicken wing eating. And she's also great at hot dog eating as well. The eaters will tell you that the hot dogs and buns are among the toughest. The Nathan's Famous hot dogs and buns are among the toughest.
Mm.
It's a pure test of technique, of capacity, and of endurance. You know, 10 minutes of eating Nathan's Famous hot dogs and buns as hard and as fast as you can for 10 minutes is a long, long time.
Sam, how does your body build up a capacity to hold that amount of food in your stomach? I mean, that's unbelievable.
I think for a lot of these, I mean, like a lot of athletes, you know, major league eaters, the very best major leaguers, the eaters who you'll see performing on Friday, they do have a God-given talent. They do have a natural capacity, like, you know, we all know people who, you know, who have bigger capacities than other folk. You know, these are, you know, the top 1% of the top 1% of people you'd know when it comes to capacity. So they're going into it with a genetic advantage, I would say, first and foremost. And then beyond that, it's you know, competing in a number of major league eating events. Like, no one comes out of left field as a rookie and wins on the 4th of July. It hasn't happened, and I'd be surprised in my lifetime if it ever happened. You need to be battle-tested, battle-trained, you know, used to competing at the highest level. And then beyond that, it really does come down to a will to win and whether or not the eaters are willing to push themselves, you know, to that level to succeed. Like, you know, like any athletic contest, like any sporting contest.
Sam, on this July 4th, when we tune in to ESPN and check out the July 4th hot dog eating contest, other than Joey, are there any other, you know, competitors that are going to give him a run for his money? Is there a next Joey Chestnut, if you will, on the horizon?
Well, I think Joey Chestnut is a once in a millennium.
He's that good.
Figure.
Yeah.
You know, he's like, you know, like a Neil Armstrong. He's just an amazing beacon of light for this nation. But there is an amazing eater who will push Joey to the limit. I was talking to Joey earlier today. He was in our offices here in New York City, and I wouldn't use the word worried. I've never seen Joey Chestnut worried in his life. But Joey Chestnut is definitely mindful, and certainly more mindful than he has been in the recent past going into the event. He's being very mindful and very watchful of a young man also from San Jose, California, the same hometown as Joey, and that's world number two, Matthew Stoney.
Matthew Stoney.
So keep your eye out for Matthew Stoney. Here's the thing about Matthew. Matthew is a relative newcomer to our sport. He's already ranked number two in the world. He's already defeated Chestnut this year in Major League Eating competition.
He has.
In the Gyro or Gyro, depending on your pronunciation, World Championships held in Houston in May. He defeated Joey by a good 2.5 euros in 10 minutes.
Wow.
Now the Gyro or the Gyro is quite similar, if you think about it, to the hot dog and bun. They're both a starch and protein-based tube. So Stoney's already got the victory, and Stoney has an incredible sense of self-belief. And more to the point, Stoney has the gift of youth. Stoney doesn't know what it's like to fail.
Right.
He is gunning for Chestnut like you wouldn't believe. And Joey, when we were speaking today, did say that he expects Stoney to push him to the absolute limit on Friday. So Joey's taking no chances. Joey's taking no chances, and he knows that he needs to go into Friday's contest ready to fire on all cylinders. Joey said if he has a bad day on Friday, the result could be in jeopardy as far as it favors Chestnut. It's like any sport, it's like why you play the game. Nothing is taken for granted in our sport, Al.
Right.
Chestnut knows that if he's going to prevail on Friday, as he certainly hopes to do so, he knows that he needs to be absolutely 100% on top of his game.
So, Sam, when you chatted with Joey out there in New York, from the gist of what the spiel you just gave, did he kind of give off a vibe of, okay, I have to be more aware? Did he seem any sort of doubt or nervousness in his mind, or was he just locked in and knowing that he has to be aware of this other competitor? I'm going to come out there and give it my best.
No, I wouldn't say it's nerves. You know, it's like if you were to imagine a pre-Super Bowl press conference.
Right.
You know, if say a defense has a great middle linebacker who's been tearing it up all season, and you know the opposing quarterback is asked, you know, do you fear number 55 in the middle? You know,
right.
The response is going to be no. Do I fear him? No. Am I mindful of him? Are we game planning for him? Absolutely. So I'd say to use a sporty analogy, that's where Chestnut is at the moment. You know, he's aware of that middle linebacker. He knows the middle linebacker's abilities, but his intention is to throw touchdowns all day long.
And is he gunning to break that record that he set last year of 69 hot dogs?
He is prime. He's in impeccable physical shape. I'll tell you this right now. I hadn't seen Joey for a couple of months in the flesh, and he looks to be in great physical shape. I would be very surprised if a new record is not set this Friday at Nathan's Famous.
Oh, that's great stuff. Ladies and gentlemen, if you're just now joining us here on the show, Sam Barkay is our guest for today. He is a representative from Major League Eating, a Masters of Ceremony for that organization. Again, the July 4th Hot Dog Eating Contest airing on ESPN today. I got to ask you, when you talk about the popularity of Major League Eating, Sam, will more events be televised in the future? Because this really is, when you talk about the entire year, this is really the only event nationally, across the U.S. of A, where people get to tune in and watch this sport on the supreme stage. What does it look like as far as the popularity goes and, you know, its presence in TV in the future? Will we see that increase?
Absolutely. I mean, the popularity of our sport is growing and growing every year. I wouldn't be surprised in the future if we didn't have more eating contests televised than there are televised Major League Baseball games.
Wow.
Which is highly optimistic. I'll grant you that. 162 yeah. regular season games, lots of teams. I get it. It's optimistic. But America should prepare for nonstop blanketed TV coverage of Major League eating events in the future.
And how soon are we talking?
As I said, it's optimistic, but if you give us, give us 5 years, I would say Major League Baseball, the National Football League, hockey, we've already completely taken over. I'm sure the so-called major sports leagues of the United States should definitely be watching the rearview mirror. We're coming for them.
And why do you think that? What makes within this 5 year span? What makes you that optimistic and that optimistic that this sport is going to get to that level that you speak of, Sam?
Well, I think our sport speaks to the values of our nation. It's to do with human success, the ability to overcome adversity, the ability to believe in oneself, and the popularity of our sport is skyrocketing. So we're optimistic, we're hopeful, we're optimistic, and more importantly, we're as hungry as ever.
Oh, that's great stuff. Well, I sure hope it does. I love watching it every year on July 4th, I tell you, Sam. Before I let you go, just to talk about the preparation to become a competitive eater, about how long would it take the average person to become a legitimate competitive eater for Major League Eating? I mean, what's that process like, Sam?
Well, I don't want to give a vague answer, but I really do think it varies from person to person. Mm-hmm. If people are interested in checking out the events we have coming up, check out MajorLeagueEating.com and keep abreast of all Major League Eating action.
There you have that. Will any event ever come close to the Nathan's Hot Dog Contest on July 4th?
Well, you got to remember, Nathan's Famous has been going since 1916.
Right, long time.
So this event wasn't just born out of nothing and came out of nowhere. This event has a long-standing history. But we have many other great events as well, all throughout the season. And the more the merrier, and the bigger the better.
All right, Sam. Well, we love to give predictions here on Current Sports. I gotta ask you, and I pretty much can guess the answer to this question, but what do you think is going to happen July 4th, the Nathan's Hot Dog Eating Contest? Who pulls out the win, and how many hot dogs do they consume?
You really are, I mean, you're putting me on the spot. I mean, here's the thing. I'll be an official on the day. So
right.
I think it would be wrong of me to give a prediction for the result.
Okay.
When I'm going to be involved in a judging capacity. But I will say this, and I'm happy to say this, in the men's division, Chestnut is the firm favorite. There's no two ways about it. He's got history on his side. He's got the world record. He's in great shape. He is certainly the man to beat. In the women's division, there's a great story there.
Right.
In the women's contest, which is kicking off at 11:15, you've got Sonia Thomas, who's undefeated in the women's championship. She's going to be going head-to-head for the first time in hot dogs and buns against the number one ranked woman in the world, a lady called Mickey Sudo out of Las Vegas, Nevada. She's ranked number four overall. That's men and women combined.
Mm-hmm.
And that is going to be a battle for the ages. So Mickey Sudo, who's in her second year of Major League Eating competition, going up against Sonia Thomas, who's been with us for 12, 13 years.
Right.
It's going to be a very hard-fought women's contest. So fireworks in the women's, and Joey is the man to beat. But you've got to remember, there's going to be Matthew Stoney, Tim Eater X Janice, and a host of other great Major League Eaters who will be gunning for that yellow mustard belt this July 4th.
Oh, boy. Well, I tell you what, my family and friends will certainly be tuned in July 4th. Again, the Nathan's Hot Dog Eating Contest. Can't wait for it. Sam Barkay, MC for Major League Eating. Hey, Sam, thanks a lot for your time today. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Have a great July 4th, guys.
All right, you do the same. Thanks, Sam. Sam Barkay. Wow, was that an intriguing interview or what? Again, Sam Barkay, he is a master of ceremonies for Major League Eating. Man, oh man, that was an interesting interview. I tell you, he really disposed a lot of myths and really gave us some great insight into the world of competitive eating. And, you know, we were so inspired by that interview and inspired by the world of competitive eating that we decided to bring a little bit of that flavor right here to WKAR's Current Sports. We have a July 4th special that you do not want to get up and turn your radio off for, folks. That's right. Stick around, because right now, in about 2 minutes, we are going to bring you the first annual. Yes, the first annual. It's going to be an annual thing, year-to-year thing, folks. First annual hot dog current sports eating contest. Oh, man. And you know who's going to be competing? Matt and Alex are ready right now. They each have 6 hot dogs, well, more than 6, actually, about 10 hot dogs sitting right in front of them. And we're going to see who can eat the most hot dogs in the span of 5 minutes. They're ready. They got the water ready and look very, very nervous and focused at the same time. Guys, are you ready to do this thing? Oh, man, I feel bad right now.
I just hope I'm alive after this, Al. I hope I don't pass out for a couple hours. I hope that that these dogs go down as smoothly as you introduced them, Al.
Yeah, I tell you, what about you? Matt looks very nervous over there.
You know, Al, I've got butterflies in my stomach. I intend to replace those butterflies with hot dogs.
Well, here we go. This is it, man. That's a great segue into our segment. Here we go, folks. I will be your play-by-play guy throughout this entire thing. And, boy, I'm nervous for you looking at those hot dogs. Again, whoever eats the most hot dogs in the span of 5 minutes will be the Current Sports 2014 Hot Dog Eating Champion. Here we go, guys. Here we go. You guys ready? All right.
Yeah, what do we get if we win?
We'll worry about that one. Okay. We'll cross that bridge later. All right, guys. Here we go. 3, 2, 1, go. All right. Here we go. We've begun, folks. They are working on their first dog. Alex has taken a big chomp out of his. He's really rushing it down right now. Matt's first bite was relatively average, but he took a big chomp out the second bite. Alex just took a huge bite out of his. Again, this is the first dog. They are on dog number one. Alex takes a sip of his water. Matt is working on bite number 3. They both have about an equal amount left in the first dog. Can you feel the intensity through your radio? Alex just took another bite out of his first dog. He only has, I don't even know how to equate that small portion. He only has a small portion left. They both take a sip of their water. I can only imagine. Alex is shaking as we speak. I'm looking at his hand as he holds the dog. He is shaking, so nervous about this competition. Again, this is our first annual hot dog current sports hot dog eating contest. All right, well, Alex has finished his first dog. Matt takes a final bite out of his first dog. They are both working on dog number 2. My goodness. I'm about to puke just watching this, folks. Okay, I can only imagine what's going through your brain as you visualize what's going on right now in our current sports studios. Alex right now, he's eating half. Well, no. Oh, my God. I thought Matt really passed him up there. No. Well, Alex right now, he only has about a bite and a half left on dog number 2. Matt, I would say almost about that portion, about maybe 2 bites for Matt. He takes a sip of his water. Alex is pacing back and forth. He takes a sip of his water. Matt takes another bite out of dog number 2. My goodness, this is just not helpful. Folks, do not do this at home unless you are trained professionals. We are trained professionals here at Current Sports when it comes to competitive eating. I wouldn't go that far, but still, this is craziness. Okay, Alex finished. Oh, he's biting. He has just scarfed down dog number 2. And Matt, they are neck and neck right now. Neck and neck right now. This is unbelievable stuff, folks. Unbelievable stuff. Well, I'm getting all this on camera too. If you want to see the visual of this, folks, you can go to WKAR. Well, actually, you can visit our video.wkar.org website after Current Sports TV is aired next week, and you can see it live Thursday night at 10 p.m. next week on Current Sports TV. This is remarkable stuff. So they're both working on hot dog number 3. Really, really slowing down now. That pace has really slowed down. They came out the gates on all cylinders. Really going at it, and they're slowing down right now on dog number 3. Matt said, you know, he could see himself eating 6. Alex went on record to saying he could eat 8. He may be rethinking all of that right now, but who knows? He takes a sip of his water. He stares at the clock. Folks, we have 2 minutes left. 2 minutes left of the first annual Current Sports Hot Dog Eating Contest. I can only imagine how these, how their stomachs are feeling right now. This is craziness. This is insane in the membrane. I believe they're both still working on dog number three. And look, oh, you guys are right neck and neck. This is unbelievable. This is unbelievable. This might come down to how much of dog number three or four is left. That's what this looks like it's going to come down to. This is unbelievable stuff. Matt really pacing himself.
This is disgusting, Al.
Yeah. This is really disgusting, isn't it?
I think you're imagining at home. This is worse. This is disgusting.
Yeah, this is pretty, pretty bad. I mean, I may be having second thoughts of doing this now. I don't know. I'm going to do it. I'm a man of my word. I'm going to do it. Alex takes a big gulp of his water. I'm trying to compose myself here. This is hilarious. This is hilarious, too. You can catch all of this footage.
This is awful, Al. This is awful. I wouldn't wish this on my worst enemy.
Yes, it's pretty bad, man. This is worse. It's maybe worse than any Game of Thrones massacre that we've seen throughout that show. And, you know, Game of Thrones is ruthless, man. This is pretty bad. Let's see. You guys are both on dog number four now? Dog number four. Alex is staring at Matt. Hey, Alex is so serious right now. This is hilarious. He is in a zone, folks. He is in a zone. We have, it's right now, we're on the fourth minute. Coming down, we have about a minute and a half left, folks. 1 minute and a half left is coming down to the
30 seconds.
I looked at the clock wrong. 30 seconds is left. I'm tripping, guys. 30 seconds left, and Alex has just finished dog number four. Matt.
I might be done.
Matt
may be
done.
I might need some mustard. Oh, my God.
Yes, Matt.
This is awful.
I think Matt is done right now. Is that still the bun of dog number three? Yeah, it's still the bun of dog number three and nine, eight. Well, that's seven, six.
This is for you at home.
Five.
I'm done.
Four, three, two, one. That's it. And Alex Shark. Well, first, I still have to see if I can beat his record. I probably won't. But Alex Shark pulls out, wow, that's what, 3.5? I want to say 3.5 hot dogs. 3.5 hot dogs. Joey Chestnut, we give mad props to Joey Chestnut. I mean, a man who can scarf down 69. That's just insane, folks. Oh, my goodness. Thoughts, guys? Well, Alex is still chewing. Matt, what was going through your head during that whole thing, man?
Why did I agree to do this? That's what was going through my head the whole time.
Happy July 4th, folks. Alex, any final words before we hit the break?
Just
You're the champion right now. I got to see if I can do it.
Just I said 7 or 8 because I thought I could do it, but not in 5 minutes. I didn't weigh in the time, so.
Right, right.
Happy 4th. I'm going to have fun digesting all this later.
Yeah.
I still can't even.
Oh, man, you're still.
I still can't get my thoughts together. Yeah, I'm not.
Oh, boy, you look sick, man. I tell you what. All right, well, folks, again, that was our first annual hot dog eating contest here on Current Sports. Happy July 4th. Please do not try this at home. Ugh.
Ladies and gentlemen, the tables have turned, and those tables are filled with hot dogs. Al Martin, stepping into the ring, going to try to top Alex Jaws Shark's Current Sports record.
Alex Jaws Shark.
4.5 hot dogs. Al, what's your competitive eating moniker? We know you go by Al Woods on the links, Al Jordan on the basketball court. You want to be Al Chestnut? You want to be Kobayashi?
You just burped. Kobayashi. Kobayashi. It's beautiful.
There we go. We're going to start in about 30 seconds here. Al, how do you feel just before we get going?
I'm pretty nervous. Because I'm competitive. You guys know how competitive I am. And seeing Alex, you know, scarf down all those hot dogs. You gave me a tip, man. I'm going to try eating the hot dogs first.
Okay.
And then trying to scarf down the bread, the bun. So we're going to see how that goes, man.
See how it pays
off. We're going to try dipping into the water, too.
That's really gross, but it's bold. And for a competitor, you got to do what you got to do.
I got to do what I got to do. 10 seconds.
All right, 10 seconds. Here we go. Start the countdown at 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, go. All right, first dog. Wow. Al takes a giant bite, about half the hot dog there. Ooh, he's already grimacing a little bit, though. He's shaking his head no. He's shaking off the pain. Leave me in, coach. I can compete for a little bit longer here. Oh, boy. The focus. Laser focus.
This is disgusting. Now,
it is disgusting. Already disgusting. Hasn't even eaten half of the first bun.
Should put some ketchup on this.
I know, right?
Mm.
I don't know how these guys do it. For years, I've been talking the talk, thinking, you know, watch it every July 4th. I could probably do that. I could try my hand at that. Absolutely not. I regret ever saying anything. Can talk the talk, you can't walk the walk. This is awful.
Yeah, it is.
It is. Al's feeling it right now, but you know what? He's about a minute in, almost. He's working on his second dog, first bun. This is going to be an interesting measurement down to the wire here between Alex Sharg's 4.5 and whatever Al can manage to put away. Kobayashi, forgive me. Oh, boy. Just laser focus. Laser focus. Using the water to his advantage, which is definitely recommended.
So we're going to... My mama told me to talk with my mouth
full, but... We're going to 3:07, Al.
3:07, okay.
We are at 3 minutes and 30 seconds just about now.
Mm-hmm.
So you got plenty of time. You've got a great pace going. Great pace. So just keep things together. Keep your focus. I think the strategy's paying off. It looks absolutely horrific for the viewers at home, but you know what? Results are results. You're going to take a win any way you can get it.
Yeah, hopefully I can win.
Alex Sharg is behind the camera right now, just sort of chuckling to himself. I don't know how he's not, you know, nursing the world's biggest stomach ache, or at least East Lansing's biggest stomach ache, but you know what? He's chugging along. He's a professional. Speaking of professionals, though, Al looks like he was born to do this. Kobayashi choking down dog number 3 and bun number 2. Oh my goodness. This. Oh no. Unfortunately. Now, one of the rules in any hot dog eating contest. Is that a reversal of fortune, you know, better known as, well, you know what, I'll let you guys at home parse that one out, but a reversal of fortune results in an automatic disqualification. Al had some close moments there, but he's pulling it together. He's got 4 dogs down and 2 buns down. Now, the buns are easily the biggest challenge. So we'll see if that strategy pays off or burns him in the end. He's going to work on that third bun right now. Keeps looking over his shoulder at the clock. He's got about a minute and 45 seconds remaining. So you're still sitting pretty, Al, if you can choke down these 2 buns and then just a little bit more.
Oh, man, you're right.
A little bit more. You got to choke these 2 down and then a bite of the last one, a large bite, because Jaws Shark really took a hunk out of his last hot dog. So we'll see what we can do here, but it's looking like it's coming down the wire. 3:07. You got less than 90 seconds. Tension in this room is palpable. You can feel it. Alex is nervous. His record is in jeopardy.
Oh, gosh, this is disgusting.
Al really looks like he's slowing down, though. He's slowing down. Keep your focus, Al. You can do this. Kobayashi.
Oh, gosh.
That is disgusting looking. Oh, boy.
Mm.
Less than a minute remaining, Al. He's going to go to work on the 5th dog. Bold strategy. Not sure how we're going to measure this out, but I say if he chokes down the dog and finishes at least one of these, maybe both of these buns, I think we have to declare him the winner. But we'll see what he can do. He's got about 35 seconds remaining. Coughs up a little bit there. That does not count as a reversal of fortune. Oh, boy. My stomach is growling trying to digest all the hot dogs I just ate. I'm sure Al will be in similar pain in a few minutes. 20 seconds, Al. 20 seconds. This is winning time. This is when Reggie Miller comes alive. Right here. Game is in hand. That was particularly gross. Oh, God. 10 seconds. 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4. That looks like conceit there. We're done. Mm-hmm. Competition is over. Alex, Jaws Sharg, your inaugural Current Sports Hot Dog Eating Contest champion.
Nope.
Very patriotic, Alex. Al, once you compose yourself, why don't you tell us how you feel?
I feel terrible. To all those who compete in this nonsense, hats off to you. You have to be, first of all, laser focused. And your digestive system has to be, I don't know, it just has to be from Pluto.
Almost because, alien, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. this is ridiculous. I mean, this is unbelievable. I mean, I have a bun, and I had a bun and, you know, maybe 1/4 left, maybe, and I ate all 5 dogs, but still the bread. Yeah, the bread is easily. It does go down easier when you dip it in the water, though. But, man, oh, man.
I don't know if it's worth it.
Yeah, this is disgusting. Happy July 4th, folks. Oh, gosh.
Man. Go enjoy hot dogs, but responsibly, please.
Yeah.
Don't try and do 5 in 5 minutes. You will regret it for the rest of your 4th.
Oh, gosh. Happy 4th.
Happy 4th.
Goodness, I can't believe that I just went through that. I can't believe that Alex and Matt just went through it with me. Oh, boy, our first annual Current Sports Hot Dog Eating Competition. Alex Sharg is the champion. I tried to give him a run for his money in the end. I put down 5 dogs, but it was the buns that were just so tough. I left a bun and a half on the plate. Oh, boy, that was fun stuff. So all in all, Alex, if you look at it, you scarfed down 4.5 dogs, right? I think it was 4.5.
4.5, Al. And, but the thing was, I coughed down the bun and the dog.
Same time, yeah. I took the dog separate and started and tried to consume the bun, you know, by dipping into the water and trying that whole thing. It worked.
That did work.
Yeah, it definitely worked. And Matt, how many did Matt have? 3.5, I think?
Matt had 3.5.
Gotcha. So mine would technically be, what is that? How would we equate that? Because I took the bun out
I'd
of
say
the,
that was probably 4.
That's probably 4.
Four
that was
and a quarter,
solid
maybe.
4. Yeah, 4.25. So, oh boy, it was a close one. So, oh man, I'm looking forward to next year's. That's fun stuff. It just really gives you an added respect for those who do it competitively. I tell you, hats off to Joey Chestnut. My goodness. All right, folks. Well, to wrap up today's July 4th edition of Current Sports, we're going to look at Brooks Lambeer. Now, Brooks Lambeer is our soccer expert here on Current Sports. He covers MSU men's and women's soccer for Impact Sports and is also a beat writer for Lansing United. Got to chat with Brooks about the United States and their end in the World Cup as they, of course, fell earlier this week on Tuesday to Belgium. 2-1 the final of that one. And we had a few callers that called in and had some things to say about the future of soccer here in America. Brooks, how you doing?
Good. How you doing now?
I'm doing very well. First of all, just get your initial thoughts on the loss. You actually, if I recall this correctly, you predicted this loss last week. Am I right?
I said extra time, but I said 1-0. But I said it would get to extra time, though.
I mean, hey, you can't get the score always right. But you did predict that the U.S. would be out. What made you so confident in that prediction? It definitely, you know, boded to be true after yesterday's match.
Well, if you look at this Belgium team, they play in top-tier leagues. And I think that's the biggest difference when you look at a USA roster versus a Belgium roster. You know, we had players like Michael Bradley and Clint Dempsey playing over in Europe, but they chose to come back here. And you want to play, as Jurgen Klinsmann has stressed, you want to play against the best competition because that's going to prepare you for this World Cup. It's going to make you a better player. You know, obviously a few injuries with Jozy Altidore didn't go quite our way. Michael Bradley was so-so. But, you know, if you just look at this Belgium team, you know, Marouane Fellaini plays for Manchester United. Romelu Lukaku scored the goal, plays for Everton. Very good young player who was on loan from Chelsea. Courtois was on loan from Chelsea FC, who was on the Atletico Madrid team that was playing in the UEFA Champions League final.
A lot of experience on that
Yes,
team.
A lot of experience, and a lot of experience gets a lot of good players. So
Right. So I tell you what, I tell you a player who really stood out for many looking at that game from a USA standpoint and perspective, was, of course, Tim Howard, the goalkeeper for the red, white, and blue. He was unbelievable in that game. I mean, he had a record 16 saves, and, you know, you couldn't fault him down the stretch. I mean, the man had 16 saves, for goodness sake. They just kept firing at him. A couple are going to find the net here and there if you riddle the man that much throughout an entire game. How impressive was he for you watching that game?
Oh, great. You know, as a former keeper, you know, I've been in situations like that as well where shots are just fired and fired at you, and the only thing you can do is you're guessing sometimes. He did a good job to stay balanced, to not dive one way, to not lean one way, to give the shooter an opportunity to shoot the other way from the opposite side he was leaning. Excellent performance. He kept us in the game, and that is why Tim Howard plays over in the EPL for Everton, and he played against some of his former teammates, Lukaku and Morales. So, you know, that's why he's our goalkeeper, and that's why he's so good, just because he plays at the top level.
You know, watching that game, a thought that crossed my mind for me, Brooks, was when watching that game, and I talked to Matt about this before the show started, it seemed as though, I mean, and this was relatively true throughout most of the game, throughout most of that game, Belgium just dominated possession throughout most of the match. There were rare opportunities where the U.S. was able to, you know, especially in the first half, was able to gain possession. They would give it right back to Belgium. The tide sort of turned a little bit in the second half, but for the majority of that game, for me and looking at that game, Belgium really dominated. And it kind of speaks to the gap, if you will, that the U.S. still has to go to really compete, legitimately compete for a World Cup title. Do you resonate those thoughts as well?
Yeah. You know, I was thinking yesterday after the game, you know, just saying we are almost there. And actually, I heard head coach Damon Runcing from SU Men's Soccer was talking about this on 7:30 with Ebling. Mm-hmm. The U.S. soccer program is heading in a good direction. Era is starting to change where more kids are getting involved and invested in soccer. U.S. soccer has changed the way things are happening in the United States. And to answer your question, really, it all starts at the youth level. That's how we get better players and how we can better prepare ourselves on the national stage and in the international stage. And it's also, like I said before, our guys playing in better leagues. You know, for an example, I would want DeAndre Yedlin, who came on for Fabian Johnson yesterday, who made a huge impact. He plays for the Seattle Sounders right now. Mm. He's 20 years old. I want to see him over in the EPL. I want him playing against the better competition. And I think that's the only way you're going to get better is playing against better competition, and as well as everything starts from the youth level up, where we get more competitive as we get into the youth level. So, and I think things are changing with Jurgen Klinsmann at the helm, the U.S. Development Academy, and so on and so forth. But it starts from the youth level, and it starts also our players playing against better competition.
You know what? Tim Howard had an interesting comment after yesterday's match addressing the popularity of soccer here in America. And he basically, in the presser, basically went out and said that it's not our job, meaning the United States national men's soccer team, it's not their job to get the youth involved and to skyrocket the popularity of soccer here in the United States. It takes more than that. What do you think about his comments? Because I honestly, to be completely honest with you, Brooks, this was all fine and dandy. I love the World Cup fiasco. It seems to be growing each and every time it comes around, each and every 4 years. But I feel as though with this loss for the US of A, I feel as though everybody's going to go back to their regular scheduled programming, go back to their usual football and basketball and baseball talk, and it's going to be kind of the deja vu from what we've seen, the, you know, 4 years ago prior to this one. I think we're making progress, but still, we still got a long way to go with the popularity of soccer here in the United States.
No, we do. But like I said, and like what Damon Rensing said as well when he was on Jack Elbing's show, there's a new era coming. You know, our parents have played soccer. Now they've kind of invested into the youth now, and then the youth that are growing up in this era are kind of getting more involved with their children and their family, young family members into soccer. And I think soccer is here to stay, and I think it'll grow.
But how much is the question?
How much?
And when? And when we would legitimately, because I've seen, you know, reading some reports that soccer in 10 or 15 years is going to eclipse the popularity of baseball or hockey. And I'm sitting there like, you got to be kidding me. You got to be kidding me. Let's be realistic here.
You know, people don't like baseball because it's very slow.
Right.
But they can say that for soccer as well. But I think, you know, especially for football with all the concussion stuff, if that keeps going on, I can see that, you know, in eclipsing football. In 10 to 15 years. But, you know, I think it's going to take time. It's not going to be a process by the next World Cup. Everyone's going to love soccer, but it's going to continue to keep growing little by little by little. And, you know, I think maybe in the next 10 to 15 years, we'll see soccer in the, and, you know, the MLS is expanding as well. They're adding four more teams in these next few years. And, you know, I think it's going to grow. And probably by, let's see, so there'll be 2018. By 2022, I think you should see a growth in soccer in the United States.
Well, time certainly will tell. We actually have a caller who has a question for you,
sure.
Brooks. Apachu, how you doing? Welcome to Current Sports. How you doing, brother?
I'm doing good, brother. Brooks, I think I got your name right. I got a question / comment. Pele, probably one of the best ever, never had a pair of shoes until he turned pro. And I get the feeling that soccer in this point in time in this country is more of an elite sport than other sports. Mm-hmm. And whether we have success or had success in this tournament or whether or not it becomes popular is totally unimportant. I think, and I noticed that most of the, if not all the players on the American team were college educated. There's a fanaticism throughout the world that utilizes a different mentality when they play that game. And that game is accessible to all levels of society, particularly the poor. And even though you're talking about developing youth soccer in this country, I do not see it going into the barrios. I don't see institutionalized soccer going into the barrios where you have kids who grew up around from other countries who are too short, too small to play football, not good enough to play basketball, or too small to play basketball, and not good enough to play baseball, who would love to play soccer. It's an incredibly beautiful sport. I cannot stand to watch it unless it's a cup. I watch soccer every 4 years. I cannot stand college soccer and professional soccer, but as a spectator for the tournament, my wife was going crazy last night. Okay? I mean, she was out of her mind.
Yeah.
And she doesn't react to any sport like that. It is something very special about that in that tournament. But I just want to represent the people of color in the Rodgers and poor people, okay, because right now, in my mind, in my perspective, we're talking Ivy League, University of Indiana, and so forth. It's not really in the Rodgers. It has to be in the Rodgers. So I'd like to get your response to that. Thank you, sir.
No problem.
Thanks a lot, Apachu.
Yeah. You know, I agree with them. I think at a world stage, I think it's caught on internationally because it's the World Cup. Everyone wants to get involved. But you know, there's different levels of fans for each different sport. You know, there's the hardcore fans that love it. There's some fans that can't stand certain sports. And like I said, soccer hasn't caught on yet, but I think it will. You know, as a guy that covers college soccer, a lot of people complain about the college soccer game and how it's not up to that par or that level. And, you know, it's not, but it is getting there. If you talk to any head coach, MSU head soccer coach Damon Rensing, you know, if you watch the Big Ten soccer and play, it's a very physical game. It's a little different. It's not as attractive and sexy as a Spanish or English Premier League style of play. But I think little by little, as the U.S. soccer program grows and as Jurgen Klinsmann changes within the youth soccer program, mm-hmm. you know, it's going to grow. And speaking on to, as he was talking about other countries, you know, one guy was telling me, you know, how's Ghana just as good as us? Well, you know, they're a third world country without, you know, not technology, nothing. No, there's no distractions for them. They go out there and play soccer four or five times a day. And that's what you don't see with the youth. You know, when I was growing up, people would play soccer, but it wasn't like when my uncles were growing up, where they would get, you know, when they were living in Detroit in the 50s and 60s, where, hey, let's go out and play some baseball. Let's play all day. You know, there's so many distractions now that no one's going out and playing four or five times a day. And that really hurts you when all these people in these other countries are playing four or five times a day at the start of the age of five and continue to their teen years.
Right, and you know something, when you talk about this discussion, when you talk about the popularity of soccer here in the States and why it's lacking, and it isn't, you know, as popular in other countries as it is in other countries, you know, there's a lot of factors that weigh into this, because first of all, it's not ingrained into our natural society of sporting viewing,
yes.
Period. It's not, and that has to do with a lot of reasons, because a lot of people... You know, the World Cup was great. Like, I'm kind of like a Pachu. You know, I watch soccer every 4 years. I cover, you know, when I'm going out and covering a local high school soccer game, or I'm going out and covering, you know, Damon Rensing's MSU men's soccer team, I'm doing it because, you know, of course it's my job, mm-hmm. but I'm not enjoying it as much as going out and covering a football and basketball game. It's not ingrained in my DNA as far as my sports viewing pleasure goes. Mm-hmm. And a lot of that, I think there's a few factors here. Two I really harped on when I was talking to Matt about this when we had our Barbershop Wednesday debate a few weeks ago, is that I feel as though USA Soccer, first of all, doesn't have that superstar, that face.
I agree.
You know what I mean? And you always need that face to sort of drive the popularity. In basketball, it's, you know, it was Michael Jordan, you know, Magic Johnson, Larry Bird, LeBron James right now. There's so many. In football, I mean, you have the Tom Brady's, Peyton Manning's. I can go on and on from every major sport here in America.
Mm-hmm.
In soccer, I couldn't name you one, maybe other than, what, Tim Howard, who's 35 years old right now. I mean, it's tough.
Landon Donovan's the only other one, really. And
yeah, exactly.
He was on the roster this year. And no, I totally agree with you, Al. In the other sports, you know, you had Michael Jordan, they had Kobe Bryant, and then you have, you know, Peyton Manning in football, Tom Brady, or and so and so.
Why is there? Why is that lacking in soccer?
Because
American soccer,
it's the talent. It's the talent. And as I said, it's from the youth level. You need to be competitive in the youth level. I don't like the U.S. development. I like the U.S. Development Academy to a certain extent, but it's only the best players playing against the best players. And whereas in these other countries, everyone's playing against each other. And I think when you have different talents playing against each other, it pushes you to want to become better than someone else. So everything starts at the youth level. It starts from when you're playing club soccer, and I'm not talking about high school soccer. You know, if it was me, I would cancel the men's and women's high school soccer, and I would just play travel soccer, because that's where you're going to find the best talent and the most competitive players.
But a lot of it also, Brooks, has to do with the fact that the best players in the world aren't playing here in the United States of America. The best players in the world are in places like Argentina and Brazil and so on and so forth. If you're not looking at – if the sample size here in the U.S. is not the best – then it's hard to get better. Don't you agree with that, too?
I mean, I agree, but it's about people pushing each other to get better. Michael Jordan didn't get good just by sitting around and moping when he didn't make his freshman basketball team. He went out and he worked every day, and we need American players like that. Guys going to go out there every day, like a Clint Dempsey, a Landon Donovan, a Tim Howard, and to go out there every day and to practice, even Michael Bradley, and to get better and to play in better leagues. I mean, that's just
right.
How it's going
to be. And that takes years to develop better players here in the United States. That's what I'm saying. We still have years and years to go for soccer to skyrocket here. We have another caller right now. How you doing? Welcome to Current Sports.
Hi, Al. couple of comments. First, the previous gentleman was talking about soccer more towards the elite, and his other comment was kids that couldn't are too big for football or, you know, too short. Unless I'm misunderstanding him also, just because they're eliminated out of that sport because of some physical capability, you still have to be athletic to play soccer. You can't be the secondhand athlete that's going to take up soccer and be worldwide competitive. Mm-hmm. These have to be athletes. Secondly, I mean, part of the question is slower development here. Everything is geared to the education system here, whereas in Europe, these clubs are teams that are outside school. So there's no eligibility requirements for kids to be eligible to play, as far as I know, for a team. Here, you know, it's through grades and everything else, and you're more regimented, I think, than over there, where they're more wide open with more opportunity to play 3-4 times a day of practice. You're not held accountable for being in school, perhaps. Mm-hmm. So, kind of my thought. I don't know what you think. I'll just hang up and listen. Thanks.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. No, he's right. The education system. I mean, that's American culture. We go to school K-12. We go to college. You know, if we're lucky, the best American players go down to the IMG Academy in Bradenton, Florida, and that's where you train with the national team. That's like an academy. The development academy in the U.S. is different. It is pretty much high quality club soccer for 10 months. The academy in Europe is you go there. They give you an education. You go through schooling, but it's like half the day you're going through schooling, half the day you're going through training. That's how it is. The academies in a different sense, and you get, and I talked to Tim Lenihan about this actually in a podcast last winter. The U.S. Academy is really it's really top tier level of club soccer. You're not going away and staying in dorms, and you're getting school in there, and they're paying for tutors and whatnot. It's a different thing, and he's right. The caller that just called in is right. It's the education system, and then when you're talking about height, if you look at soccer, the top leading goal scorers in most high level quality soccer leagues are actually under 6 foot, and I did a project for this for one of my classes.
Right.
Lionel Messi's only 5'6", and he's scoring 41 goals in a season.
I don't want to give the impression that, you know, you know, looking at Apache's caller, which was very insightful, mm-hmm. but we don't want to give the perception that the athletes who play soccer aren't athletic or unbelievably talented athletes. Mm-hmm. To be able to run as much as they run throughout an entire soccer match, you have to be unbelievably in shape for that, and you have to be unbelievably, you know, focused throughout that amount of time to play nonstop up and down a field bigger than a football field. I mean, it's unbelievable. They're unbelievable athletes.
Mm-hmm. They are. And you know, Michael Bradley ran the most around the field, I believe, in this World Cup. It was like over 3,000 kilometers. I forgot what it was. It was like 3 miles.
They ran miles throughout a game.
And like I said in last week's show, you know, run a beep test. The beep test is the equivalent of running in a soccer game because it gets faster and faster as it goes, and you have to stop and start. You know, it's difficult. It's not like basketball and football where you can kind of sit around, stand around, and wait for the play. You're constantly moving.
Thanks a lot to Brookslam Beer, who knows all things soccer, for Impact Sports. Follow their work. Again, just search Impact Sports. Well, unfortunately, we are out of time, ladies and gents. I can smell all of the food that you all are cooking out there right now. Man, oh, man. Me personally, though, after going through that whole hot dog eating contest ordeal, I'm full. I'm fine. Maybe I'll go take a dip in the pool, huh? Well, happy July 4th. Hope it's a festive one with your family and friends. You've been listening to Current Sports with me, Al Martin, on WKAR AM 870. As always, take care. Have a fantastic holiday weekend. Be safe and be easy, people.
If tomorrow all the things were gone, I've worked for all my life, and I had to start again with just my family by my side, I thank my lucky stars to be living here today, 'cause the flag still stands for freedom, and they can't take that away.